This is
Cyber Station USA.
I warn you, their ingenuity goes hand in hand with their technology.
I think it's fair to call this hostile territory.
For you, I'll make an exception.
What you hold in your hand is the proof of their power.
Come here. You're not hurt, right?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Network's Thinking Through the Trees. It's a show that, again, something that my co-host came up with. So I'm excited to welcome to the program, Michael Chappie. Michael, how are you? And I told you, man, when you give me an idea, we promoted some stuff with Warner Brothers. I said, I like working with you because you're funny. You understand pop culture. And you could kind of bring some humor to the game. So I said, okay, we'll do a show. Well, I was so into The Sopranos, I literally binge-watched every season in, like, how long? I told you, Michael, like only 3 weeks, right? Or something crazy like that. Binge-watched the entire Sopranos. Yeah. Never watched it before. So then I was all Sopranos, like, kind of, I got to get some Sopranos on, right? And so I reached out to our first guest, and I'm excited to welcome the program, celebrity Armin Guerrero. We're here to discuss the Sopranos 20th anniversary live, and also we're going to discuss his career. Armin, thanks for calling. How are you?
Thanks for having me on. It's such an odd time. It's 10:15 over here. Where is it? What is it over where you
10:15? I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, man. You keep ripping me about the...
Oh, man. Thank God for the same time zone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Very
you
guys plan this well.
Yeah, you keep messing with me. Well, my guest at 10 o'clock at... just didn't end up happening. I said, well, let's do 10:15. I was binge-watching Entourage now. I'm kind of... and I'm supposed to get the main star from Entourage on my show, so it's kind of funny when we... these shows, I get into them, and then I just reach out, but I had a publicist to contact, and then somehow Amazon figured out what I wanted to watch next. It's scary, Armin, because a publicist contacted me saying they wanted me to interview the star of Entourage. I said, what's Entourage? Then literally Amazon, I go onto my Amazon list, and Entourage is picked as one of the ones that I should watch. Isn't that crazy? I don't get how they must...
So in other words, your activity is being tracked somehow.
Somehow. And guess what?
Pretty much, yeah.
And so let's go to Armin's background. We were talking off air, and I was blown away because this guy, Michael, you got to watch out. Some of our kind of things when we broke the law as kids, we got to watch out for this guy. He's going to tell us a little bit about his background. But let's first talk about Armin. Why did you want to become an actor?
Well, it started in high school. I'm from upstate New York. I attended Albany Academy, where I graduated high school. It's a K-12. Back then, it was a private military school, a day school, and they've done away with the battalion. They still do military operations and formations, but it was founded in 1813. It's founded based on the West Point model, and they had the English department mandated that you participate in a public speaking event called their annual declamations. And I participated in it and did very, very well in speaking before the student body. And one of my teachers once approached me and asked me if I'd be interested in the dramatic arts department. And I said, no, I want nothing to do with that. He indicated that there were some good people that I was on the football team with that were on it. And I thought, well, I might try that. And I did. And I loved it, and it started from there. And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to do something that I loved. And it's been a long road. I've taken different turns here and there. There was a while that I lost my appetite for the business, for acting, and I did something else, and I tried to start it up again. And I was driving a cab in New York, and I didn't have a game plan, had no plan. And I pursued other interests, and I fought professionally as a kickboxer in the Professional Karate Association, the PKA. I became New England heavyweight champion, fighting under George Pizzari in Providence, Rhode Island, where I attended the Karate Institute there on Branch Avenue. And I came into contact with some police officers, and I thought I might try that. And, you know, when you're an actor, the stakes have to be high. And I thought I'd make enough money to go back to New York and possibly pursue an acting career without having to drive a cab and burn the candle at three ends, so to speak, for two ends, because I was getting very, very exhausted from that, and I wasn't getting work, and I didn't do it the right way. About 3 weeks into the job, I said, no, I like these stakes. This is much higher. These are real stakes. And I kept my membership in the unions, but I stayed there, and I did that for 30 years. And in that time, I started picking up my interest in doing some films and television and some commercials, and I did. And in my 20th year, as I wound down my career, approaching my 30th, I started working again, and I got very, very lucky. I got cast in Brotherhood, The Departed. I signed on with a commercial agent, Buchwald, in New York, and I got brought in on The Sopranos, and one thing just led to another, and I got to, it's been fantastic. I got to work with Marty three times, The Departed, The Wolf of Wall Street, and then Vinyl, HBO's Vinyl. I got to work with some wonderful, wonderful people, and I just can't believe how nice it's been. I'm very, very fortunate. I aged out and maxed out at the police department, the East Providence Police Department in East Providence, Rhode Island. And I moved back towards New York after I retired. I live in just outside of the city here in Western Connecticut. I love the rolling hills, the streams. And it's just a beautiful thing, and I consider myself blessed that I've been this lucky.
Armin, you gave us a great story. We're going to hit you with questions right off the bat. Michael, any questions?
Sure.
I'm going to go into more of the story. I was telling the story, and he's giving us a little bit of background, but I want to go into specific things. Any questions so far, Mike, you have for Armin?
So how did you work with Martin so many times?
What happened was I was I had been the casting director who I made contact with just to work as an extra in Showtime's Brotherhood had taken me aside, Carolyn Pickman in Boston, CP Casting, and because that's where it was set. It was, some of that was filmed in Boston, most of it in New York. But they were casting the smaller roles out of Boston. And she called me in to read for a few of the smaller roles, and I did. And on the third callback, I was instructed to go to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, not the older. There's a second one in Boston. And we went up to a suite, and I met Marty up there. He really liked my audition. I got cast in the role of the one of the two Providence gangsters who get into a fight and get beaten up by Leo DiCaprio. And everything went well. Of course, the film was nominated for five Oscars and won four of them, including Best Director and Best Picture.
Wow.
And about several years later, my agent got a call from Ellen Lewis. And they just wanted to know, and it was, I think it was a Friday, my phone rang, and they said, they'd like you to go down, and can you be in New York Thursday for a fitting? And this wasn't even for an audition. And I said, sure. And I went down, and the very next day, we were filming at Rao's on the east side of New York. And it was an overnight shoot, and it was the scene in Wolf of Wall Street where Bo Dietl is advising Leo on his predicament in The Wolf of Wall Street. And I later found out the film had actually wrapped, and they just wanted to insert this scene. Now, I was hired along with Gary Pastore, who Marty had hired to do some work on Goodfellas years before, and Louis Venaria, who was Crazy Mario in... Louis was Crazy Mario in A Bronx Tale.
Okay.
You know, he tells the story about how to test a girl on the highway with a trucker looking. So I got to be friends with them. Good, good people. Great actors. And all we did was stand at the bar in the background. You can't even make us out in the film. And I went up to Marty afterwards, and I said, Marty, I said, this was so nice of you to do this. I said, you know, you could have just had extras or stand-ins do this, because we were blurred out in the background. And he said, oh, I just want to get you in there. Want to get you all in there. That's what I want to do, get you back. And then some years later, they were casting for Vinyl. And again, I was called in along with some other people. I ended up being cast as the mob boss interest in this series by the name of Corrado Galasso. And I had to pinch myself because we were working out of Steiner Studios at the old Naval Brooklyn Navy Yard in New York. And what a nice man he is. What a peach of a guy. You know, I walked into my dressing room after rehearsing something in Brooklyn, and I thought the room was different. I said, well, this is not my room. I went out in the door, and I said, oh, that's my name's on the door. This is the dressing room. Why does it look different? And I see a package, and I look in the package, and there's a bottle of wine. And next to the bottle of wine is this card. I open the card. It's got my name. It's handwritten. And there's a handwritten note saying, welcome, Armin. So happy to be working together again. Marty S.
Wow.
And I just, my breath was taken away. I thought, and then I found out all of the other cast members had received the bottles of wine and a similar individual note. And I went up to him afterwards. We went up and we shot the scene we had been rehearsing for. And I went up to him. He had introduced me to his lovely wife and daughter. Such a nice guy. And I said, excuse me, Marty, I said, thank you so much. I don't know what to say. No one's ever done this for me. It was so nice. No one's ever done this before. I've never heard of this. This is so nice. And he said, well, that's what we do. We come to work. We enjoy each other's company. We're nice to each other. That's what we do here. And let me tell you, amidst all of the high caliber, high pressure, hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent a day making sure you're where you're supposed to be and doing what you're supposed to do, whether it's cast, crew, it doesn't matter who, this guy just wants everyone to enjoy themselves at work.
Wow.
Man, it doesn't get better than that. It just doesn't get better than that. The guy is such a – what a guy. There's no one like him. No one.
Why do you think he liked you so much, Armin? You know, getting it from the smaller role to a bigger role, yeah.
I think what he does is, I think it's the same with everyone he works with, and I have to explain it. I've explained it like this before. He shows up to work, and he shows up. He's ready to go, and he leaves the accolades at home, and he wants to tell a story, whatever that story is. He's looking to tell a story, and he's reliant upon everyone to bring and he has this blank canvas, so to speak. I use the metaphor of a canvas, and he's got a blank canvas, and all he's asking everyone to do is to bring your special colors to this canvas so that I can take it and make my story. And I think if you're one of those people that can just adjust and contribute and offer feedback and just be relaxed and avoid doing those things that professionals just don't do, you know, I think he gravitates to that. And I think his genre, his favorite genre is
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
The mob, the criminal enterprise genre that he does, he's said that. And, you know, one look at me, and that's pretty much what I look and sound like. And I think, you know, but he does enjoy the camaraderie. He really does, and he's a good guy. And I don't really think I'm anything special because there's so many other people that he does gravitate to and enjoys working with. And I think we all share that ability to just change the rhythm, adjust the shift, try it this way and that way, or maybe even come up with something no one else thought of at the appropriate time. And because that's happened with me. Marty will – Armin, how did you say that? What was that? Yeah. Say it that way. Yeah, like that. Of course, there's other times. No, not like that. Do it that way. Yeah, okay. And you want to be able to give and take and bob and weave and be part of the fabric of what's there. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Rather than just be someone who's going to be told what to do,
yeah.
You want to ease yourself into being part of the fabric that's on a set or on location. And he's a very – he embraces that. He embraces that in all of his people, whether they're carpenters, lighting people, sound, it doesn't matter. Everybody is on the same team, and he really is a beautiful man to work with. I really learned a lot just by watching him, He's a good man. He really is.
Wow. You know, what impressed me about you, Armin, is, again, how talented you are. I think that if you wouldn't have had a career as a police officer – and I'm going to go to Michael on this, and I know Michael will have another question because he really does his research. I'm impressed by Michael in that way. I just kind of have conversations with my celebrity guests.
Thank you.
But I think he's so talented that if he wouldn't have had a full-time job as a police officer, Michael, I believe he would have been would have even done better as an actor if he had the opportunity just to let everything else go. What are your thoughts, Michael, on that?
Absolutely. I watched it, the movie you were in, The Manor.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun. Tom DiNucci's film.
Yeah. So the chess scene blew me away.
I had so much fun doing that. I'll tell you a little story about it. But go ahead. I'll fill you in on a little bit of that. Go ahead.
And it was just, you blew me away. How you were explaining
what the pieces meant.
Explaining life.
That was part of it. That's because I was trying to raise my son the right way, which turned out to be not so much the right way.
Right.
You want to know how that came about?
Absolutely.
When I was brought on to do that, and Tom DiNucci, he worked with Chad Verde, who just did Vault. But Tommy directed that, but this was Tommy's, this was Tommy's first out of the block directing piece, and or one of the first. But he sent me this. He and the director, he was producing it, and he and the director sent me this dialogue, this scene. They said, "Would you be interested in doing this?" And it was ultra low, it was a low budget. It was ultra low budget. And I looked at it and I said, "Oh my God, here's an opportunity to be someone who's not a thug or a mobster or someone who comes up with a different way to tell you to go F yourself." You know, I said, "Oh, this is interesting," you know. And that was the first thing that it attracted me. The second thing was that as I read the script and I'm reading that musical part, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I looked at that and I'm thinking, look at this. This is an iambic pentameter. This is in classic Shakespearean iambic pentameter. But as it went on, it was losing it. So I thought, no, wait a minute. Let me rewrite this way and that way. Let me do this over. Let me invert this word. Let me take this term of art and use it over there. Let me try this. Let me try that. So before long, I had changed it so it all pretty much was uniform. And I was staying at a hotel. I was staying at a hotel on right off of 84 in Connecticut because I was still looking for a house. So at that time, I would go out and in a parking lot and read over the script, and I would call Tommy and I said, "Hey, I'm going to read something to you. Let me know what you think of this." And I said, I have something musical here. Let me sing this to you and tell me what you think." He says, "All right." So he's on the phone listening to me with Jonathan Schermerhorn, the director, and they're both listening. And I started singing what you see me singing in the piece. And they said, "Hey, that's pretty cool." And now, you know the reference to the white pawn, correct? Remember that?
Yeah, I do. But
okay, without trying to get
really
too much away,
what
happened was there happened to be construction workers coming in from around the country to do some work in and around Connecticut. And at night, they'd all come back from work, and they were staying at this hotel, and they would be all dressed in white, but they were dirty and bruised or bleeding because they were going, I don't know what they were doing, but they were going someplace and getting trees down and moving the earth and laying a road down, and they'd all be back. And I looked at them and I said, "Yeah, these guys are the white knights. They're the white pawns. They're the grunts. They're the pawns. They're the guys going out taking the hits." And that was the image I used in these chess pieces, and that's how that came about.
Wow.
That's how that song, "I Am a White Pawn," I started making
right.
a musical bit out of it. And they just were, they loved it, and that cast a nice beginning with me and Tom DiNucci.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a lot of fun with
really
that.
Impressed.
You know.
So Armin,
really
where
did.
Can we watch that one where you played that role? Because I've not seen some of these things. Yeah.
The Manor, I believe, is now on. I believe you can get it on either iTunes or on demand. I think you can get it on Amazon in a DVD form. I know it was on sale at Walmart. I know it was. Or maybe it's in Redbox by now, but that is available. That is available.
Michael,
It was one of my favorite roles because it had nothing to do with, you know, the stereotypical things that I'm approached about, you know?
Right. And that's why, I mean, I was like, okay, I didn't think, like, I don't want to say, you know, you're a Goomba, but you usually get cast as
I do. I do.
An actor's got to work, and you got to work.
That is part of the business. It's a visual business that, you know, people, that's how they work. You have to accept that. And and that's why if I'm lucky enough to get a part like I did in The Manor or as a judge in Mulberry Tree, I try to accentuate that in the material that I send to other casting directors so that they can see, hey, you know, I'm just – it's not the only kind of work that I can do. And even if they know that, they still want to, you know, they have to be concerned with, can we sell tickets?
Yeah.
Will we get sponsors? Will people buy ad time by putting this on the network television? And if so, well, who are the masses going to identify with? And they identify with the bad guy, the good guy, this guy, the shaven guy. You know how it is. And that's it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's part of the business that you have to play to. And I myself did. When I started putting my facilities together and my machinations in order to pursue this hardcore and directly and then put everything else aside and do it, that's what I exploited. What do I look like? Where would I fit? I know what I'd fit as. I'd fit as a bad guy. So I'm going to try to get my foot in the door that way. And that's what I did, you know. Try getting it out of the door and do something else. It's a little difficult once people accept you that way.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. I was blown away by your – I thought it was really good.
So, Armin, we were talking off air.
I appreciate that.
The biggest role you had where you were one of the main people, what part was it?
My favorite of all of the ones I've done to date – was the role of Corrado Galasso in Vinyl. It was an HBO series.
Yeah, I interviewed one of the stars.
Progress.
Yeah, I interviewed one of the stars when it was I was doing a radio tour for it when it first came out. Yeah. Tell us about that character.
Oh,
yeah.
Who was it?
I can't remember. I've interviewed so many people.
That was
4 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Corrado Galasso was an upper echelon mob boss. He was a mob boss who pretty much controlled people who in the music business would he ingratiated himself into the music business because a music producer owed him quite a bit of money, and part of paying off the debt another record label owner offered to pay the debt by selling some of the royalties of the groups that he had to him at a discount in order to pay off his friend's debt, which still indebted him, but he thought he could pay him off. So once Galasso gets into the music business because someone owes him money, he's in for good. And it shows a little bit about what happens with any kind of business, not just the music business in the 70s in New York, which this focused on, but in any business, if you get involved with people who use threats, intimidation, and beatings and possible death to control your finances, that can happen in any business, whether you own a car dealership or a restaurant or anything. It does happen. And that was what I did as in that role. And I was originally hired just to do the pilot episode, and HBO liked it. They picked it up for 9 more episodes, and I was in the next 4 there were of the 10 episodes that were available.
Oh, wow.
In that first season, I was in 5, including the pilot was like a movie in and of itself. It was just that was the one that also was featured Andrew Dice Clay in a way that I've never seen him before, and he actually did an incredible job. But everyone was absolutely incredible, and that was the one Marty actually directed that one, even though he was executive producer with Mick Jagger.
Expected this to be huge.
Episode.
Susan Hayward, I interviewed. That's who I interviewed.
Oh, nice girl. She's good. She is really good. I worked with her several times because she played she was an assistant up in the office there of the record label. Yeah.
I had to go back.
Very good actress.
I had to go back.
It's
very hard when all the people I've interviewed, Armin, and to go back and say, I remember Vinyl, and I thought it was going to be a huge hit. Michael, did you get to watch it? I mean, because they expected, look, you have all these high powered, they were spending tons of money in advertising. They thought it was going to be a huge show. And I'm sure you were banking on that, Armin, and it just didn't happen. It's like, man, you know, but that's what this business
happened. I wasn't banking on it because I don't, you know, you always know that, you never know.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
You just never know. And I was only supposed to do the pilot episode. Once they picked up the season and then we went back the next year and were filming, I was very much hoping, I really was hoping with all that I could hope with, that this would get traction and last a few years. But it didn't. You know, the powers that be, there was a new head of HBO, and they wanted to see bigger numbers in the viewership, and it didn't happen to their satisfaction. So they just canceled it. And it's one of those things. What are you going to do? It's one of those things.
There's nothing you could do about it. Exactly. All right, Michael, because I love your questions.
No.
You've been doing some great job studying Armin. Go ahead with your next question, Michael.
So I have to know. So obviously Marty came out with his thing about superhero movies. What's your take on it?
On those kinds of movies or his take?
No, on those kinds of movies.
Well, I've gone to some of them. Some I've liked, some I haven't. But I think they're valid. I think they're valid films. I don't have any problem with them. But I also think that he and others like him and Francis Ford Coppola, I believe that they are fully entitled to their opinions. I don't see it as a problem. You know, if it's not his thing, it's not his thing. That's okay.
Right.
You know.
Well, you were actually in a comic book show.
Underdog.
Well, you were an underdog, but you were in Gotham too.
That's right. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
That's right. Gotham. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't be, I'm not in a position to say, oh, well, I'm not going to do that because I don't believe in such and such. I had an opportunity. I had an opportunity to do, again, something the likes of which I'm not usually asked to do. And I had a blast doing that. And you know what's nice about doing Gotham? Let me tell you that this was a special thing that did a lot for me for Gotham. as you can imagine, I was, you know, moving to Connecticut, and I was hoping, okay, there should be another season of vinyl, and that should provide income. And you know how it is. You try to plan and hoping that all of the pieces fit so that, you know, you don't get put on pause. And I was devastated when you know, vinyl was canceled. I thought, oh boy, what a time for this to happen. And then within a year, I was cast in Gotham. And what made it special was that it was at the same studio, Steiner Studio. And it was nice to be back there. Even though it was just for a day, it was so nice to be back there. Such good memories. That cobalt blue light at the top of the building that you can see, it's a beacon across the city. It was just perfect. And I was so happy. I thought, I missed the step, a little speed bump. It's okay. I booked something, and look at this. Wow, I'm back at Steiner Studios. It was so nice. It was such a heavenly walk for me to go through those doors. It was nice. It was a nice feeling. And it was great working with the people on Gotham. What a great crew of people over there.
All right, so here's the thing. The reason why I had Armin on at first was, again, I was like – I was bugged about the finish of The Sopranos, so we'll go. I was really bugged at the finish. The fun. We're not going to talk about it because we don't want to spoil it for somebody like me. 2 years ago, I would have said I've never watched The Sopranos in my life. So I watched the whole show. I was bugged. I started doing research. I found out there was a book out, and then before I know it, I found Sopranos Con, and now again, Armin. Armin's the man. He's connected me. Mike, I can't. I'm not going to say anything till we get to interview the head of this, who's running this. But look at me. You know, I always get celebrities, and sometimes I have to work hard. Other times, they just come right in my lap. It just all depends. But I went ahead and shot Armin a message on Facebook. He was the first person I saw posted on Sopranos Con, and he didn't respond to me the first time. Then I brought up I work with NBC. And it's true. And I said, I've had Ray Liotta on. I've interviewed a lot of big people. I do all the top shows on NBC. Armin comes back to me and says, sure. Yeah, I'm interested in learning. And then bam, I get him on the show. But we have him on because of The Sopranos. Your role, how did you get the role, first of all? And is everyone iconic that's even guest starred on The Sopranos because of how great a show it is? That's a pretty long question. I'm sorry, Armin, but you can kind of take us through. Yeah.
Let me just, if you could just you asked me what it was like. What was it? Getting cast?
Yeah, getting cast. We'll do the cast
and
first.
What was the second part of that question?
No, let's just go first. We'll go with the cast thing first, and then we'll go to the other thing. I'm sorry. I was extending my question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's all right. So I was at home one day, and my phone rang, and it was George Ann Walken, who was casting director for The Sopranos. And she asked me if I was Armin Garrow and this and that, and she had my phone number. So I thought she had seen I had sent two headshots along with my resume to their office in hopes of getting attention for casting in the show. And so the first thing she said was, is this the way you talk normally, the way you're talking right now? I was on the phone with her. And I said, yes, but if you'd like me to, she said, no, that's, you're talking exactly the way we want you to talk, with a New York dialect. And I don't think I have one, but she at least said, well, you know, do you have a Rhode Island accent? Because I was living up in that area, southeastern Massachusetts, just over the line from Providence. And she said, no, that's fine. I said, how did you get my, you got my resume? She said, oh, no, we have thousands of those in the closet. They have so many, they just can't get through them all, you know, because back then there were thousands and thousands of people going to gymnasiums and lining up and, you know, auditioning for different roles. And because the show was so popular, a friend of mine wanted to go, and I said, forget it. We'll never get in. And as it turned out, there were like 15, 16,000 people there by 10 o'clock in the morning, and
oh,
they can only
gosh.
See a few hundred, and they just – and people, the rest of the people just dropped off their resumes in piles in these bins. That's how crazy it was. So I mailed it, and she says, oh, no, we didn't look at that. Our writing staff saw you in The Departed at the New York premiere. And the funny part, I was reading the New York Daily News at the time I got this phone call, and I was reading a little blurb about Marty getting Best Director for the a Golden Globe. At the moment, my phone rang, and she called up and said, the writing staff saw you in the Departed, and they'd like to bring you in for something. So I go down, and I meet with her. I was also there with Dominic Chinese Jr., who also eventually was cast, and we read these roles, and I did it. It was generic banter between mobsters and people that owed them money. Then they called me back to read what turned out to be a couple of scenes that I had not yet seen on the show. I had not yet seen. There was one scene between with Christopher and an Italian Zip that he had hired, telling him he's where to get the guns to kill someone. And there was another scene with Dan Grimaldi, who played Patsy, threatening Annabella Sciorra, who played Gloria,
yes.
Threatening her with finding her pieces of her on the leather seats if she doesn't leave Tony alone. And I had never seen those before. So those were the two scenes that I read. And that was what I was brought back to Silver Star Studios to meet with Timothy Van Patten, the director of the episodes I was in, and David Chase, and George Ann was there. And I walked back out to the parking lot after the audition. And George Ann is... she is one of the finest casting directors because she knows how to walk you through what you're going to be doing. And a good casting director not only does a good job reading with you, but will offer a little tidbit of advice here and there, and getting you to tweak it this way and that way, because they know what the producers and directors are looking for. And she is absolutely superb at that. She and Ellen Lewis are absolutely superb at that. So, I walk back out to my car. Now, there are times when you walk out of an audition and you think, gee, I should have done this. I should
right.
have done that.
Yeah.
I didn't. Oh, I shouldn't have. And when I walked out of there, I thought, yeah, I left it all there. I didn't leave. I left it there. And I looked up, and I got in my car, and I kind of looked up, and I looked up, and, you know, my mom passed away in 95.
Oh.
I said, well, Ma, I left a good one. Nothing more. If I don't get this, it's okay, because I left a good one. I left a real good one, so it's okay if I don't get this. And about a week, 2 weeks later, I found out I'd booked it. And right after I booked it, I got a call from Buchwald saying that I had that Kraft wanted me to do a national commercial for Kraft Easy Mac cheese, and it was a very funny commercial. Very, I wanted so bad, I was so happy to do it, but I already told George Ann, I'm sorry, I told you I'm going to do it. We looked to see if the Kraft commercial could work around the Sopranos schedule. And they're quite rigid with commercial. They are rigid. Had I booked the Kraft commercial first, George Ann had explained that they would be able to work around that because they want to see their actors make money. But the reverse is not true. You can either be there or not in Georgia at 1 o'clock on that day to do it or not. So given that, George Ann said, well, you know, we want you to make money, and this would have been a lot more money. We want you to make money, so why don't you do that? We'll get somebody else for this. I said, no, I can't do that. I already told you I was going to do it. You were first. You were first. I said, so that's the way I'm going to go. I'm a man of my word. I already told you I'll be there Thursday or whatever day it was. She said, well, thank you so much. I mean, she was really very pleased I said that. So I called Buckwald back up. I called Michael Raymond, who's my agent there, and I told him the decision I had made. He says, well, I'm glad you told me. Thank you very much. I respect that. You know, when you're forthright and you're honest about what you do, you're never going to have any problems.
Right.
So I did it. And at the time, I had booked that job, I had been going through a tough time. I was going through some tough times at work. There were some difficult times there with management, and I was going through a divorce, and it was very, very, it was a low point. It was mm-hmm. a low point. And so
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Job, and at the end of it, at the end of the job, I had no idea that they did this. This is an industry practice that on your last day, when they say cut and that's it, the director will suddenly announce, and that's a wrap for Armin. You know, and I didn't know this. So after the bloody scene, they brought me back from outside. I thought I was going to film something else. And Timothy Van Patten had said that, and everybody started applauding me. I thought, oh my God! I mean, I started to well up. I couldn't believe how nice this was. It was at John's on 12th Street, on the east side of New York, the Lower East Side. A wonderful restaurant, and that's where we filmed the scene where I got curb stomped,
yes,
as they call it. And I told everyone, I said, well, you know, when George Ann hired me, she said, welcome. Welcome to the team. And I said, this has been felt, this has felt every bit as it could, being a member of the team. And I want to thank you. And I hugged Jimmy and I kissed him on the cheek. I said, thank you so much. I said, this was so special. He says, no, you brought your stuff, you did your thing. In other words, he was acknowledging that it's not all me. You did, you brought your game here, you know. And I had a funny moment with I had a funny moment with him when I was preparing to get my the back of my head kicked.
Yeah.
On the bottom of the bar stool there, they had built out of balsa wood this soft step, and they had taped over it, and I was wiping it down with Purell disinfectant, and you know, adjusting my mouth on it, getting ready to prepare, you know, for what we're gonna do. And they had placed a sandbag next to my head so he could kick that and not me, you know, part of what we were doing. And Jimmy's standing there, and he says, "You gotta put your mouth on it." I looked up. I was lying on the floor. And I looked up. I said, "Well, yeah, I'm preparing for the scene. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, adjusted right." Why? I said, "Wouldn't you do this?" He goes, "Nah, I would never do that." I said, "You wouldn't put your I got Purell. You wouldn't put. Yeah, I would put my mouth on that." I said, "Well, look at it from this point of view." I said, "Let's say you were Joe Nobody that came here to do this. You got lucky enough to get cast. And the guy standing there, and I knew we had a high regard for Marlon Brando. I said, then the guy standing there is Marlon Brando. I said, would you do it?" He looked for a moment. He says, "I see your point." Good, lovely guy. Lovely, lovely guy. He was, what a nice, nice man he was. It's so sad that he's passed.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people miss him. He would have done some tremendous, tremendous, awe-inspiring work.
Oh, yes. I mean, I really
absolutely
just knew nothing about The Sopranos, watched the show, and just, it was just unbelievable. And, I couldn't wait to watch the next episode. And I streamed it all. I work all night some nights and just watching it. And it's just like, this is genius. All right, Michael, this is again another question for Armin. Go ahead.
So, what was your favorite of all your jobs? What was your favorite one?
The favorite one was Corrado Galasso in Vinyl. That was
Wow.
my favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my favorite. And there was another favorite role I had, but it wasn't film or television. In 1980 or 81. I got a chance to do a play called Bent at Second Story Theater in Newport, Rhode Island. And the Bent is about the persecution of homosexuals in pre-World War II Nazi Germany. And I played the role of Greta, who owned and operated a bar that catered to homosexuals, and he would put on a transvestite show. And that was one of my favorites in theater because it was absolutely completely out of type.
Oh yes, I think that's definitely, and that's part of being an actor. Now, when I've talked about he's retired as a police officer now, Michael, just to give an update, because I'm glad I had an off air to really understand this. Again, Armin, you're one of the best guests I've had. And honestly, I've had huge celebrities I've interviewed. But the way you're able to tell stories, you got to write a book. It's at one point when
you know, someone else mentioned that to me.
I was just about to say that.
You got to write a book just because you.
All right.
And that's one of my fortes in promoting is helping people write books. But I'm working with a guy right now that was part of the drive in '86, and he's writing a book, Anthony Griggs, and I'm going to be helping in the process of co-writing that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and look at me name dropping. But,
okay.
But Armin, when I talk about, but the thing that brings out, and you told me this before, you prepare yourself so much for everything you do. Now you're not. Out of the biz. I mean, you retired. Now you can get as much work as you want. What kind of job are you looking for now? What, like, you know, you never know what your next job is going to be. It could be the greatest job ever, and we could see you win an Academy Award someday. You never know. It's just this is the way this business works.
Well, I, you know, I will do whatever, whether it's theatrical, whether it's theater, which is why I moved closer to the city. And I've already done an off-Broadway show called Alpha, How Alpha Learned to Love, written by Vincent D'Amelio, and I had a wonderful time doing that. And it was also another favorite role of mine as a grandfather who wanted to pass his Italian bakery down to his firstborn son, and wanted to see it passed down to his grandson, and was kept in. I don't mean to divert that attention. I apologize, but I just did something called CODA, which is the acronym for Children of Deaf Adults, and I worked on that with John Fiore in the Gloucester Rockport area, and very, very touching story about a girl who grows up her whole family are deaf mutes. And she's the only one that hears and can speak, and so she represents them in a lot of matters, but wants to also go to Berklee School of Music to pursue her own career. And the stories about some of the things that can happen with a family who relies heavily on this girl. It's a very touching story. I got a chance to do that. I worked with Anthony Caron and Vincent Pastore on the Wu-Tang American Saga, Wu-Tang and American Saga on Hulu, that's streaming now. But what I'm interested to do next is to do whatever it is that comes my way. I'll look at whatever. I have a couple of scripts that I've been looking at. But as everything else, is the signatory in place, the SAG signatory?
Yes.
Has that been established? Is the money in escrow? Has the insurance been paid? I mean, there are business matters that have to be tended to in order that something can be created and finished, a finished product to sell. You have to be practical. So it's anything that comes along will get a consideration, as long as it's is it done under the union's rules, whether it's Actors Equity Union or SAG-AFTRA, and are other considerations made? And I mean, I have turned down a few things that are the same old thug and, a different way to tell someone to go F themselves. And I'm happy to let someone else do that. That's okay. I don't put that down. It's just that I need to diversify what I do. And I think it's important. I think every actor has their own or her own way. Every performer has their own process, has their own journey, they have their own likes and dislikes. And my only concern is that is this something that's going to diversify what I've done? And at the end of the day, will I be able to turn what I've done as a career into something that could possibly, and this is my preference, preferably, not possibly, but preferably, benefit someone who's not as fortunate. That's why I was involved with the Make-A-Wish Foundation back in 2007 as their spokesperson and chairperson. It was I'm trying to find the words here. I was their chairperson, their official chairperson, And I also work with since then honorary chairperson. The word escaped me. I'm sorry. I was their honorary chairperson in 2007 and 2008, and I've since worked with Children's Wishes of Rhode Island. They've taken over, and because the Make-A-Wish Rhode Island is no longer operating because it's such a small state. Right. But the Children's Wishes of Rhode Island raises money for children who have been affected with life-threatening illnesses and health issues that are life-threatening. And so I do whatever I can to do from time to time to use my position or celebrity to help them raise money. When I retired as a police officer, rather than have a retirement party with all of the, all of the wahoo glory, stories of, oh, I remember when he did this and I remember when he did that. I dedicated the entire retirement affair with a silent auction and a fundraiser to send this one little girl with her family to, in this case, it was we sent them to Disney World. And I was able to raise about $7,000. And they were sent for about a week so that they could have a special memory, you know. And I think, you hope to be able to continue your work so that here and there you can help somebody. You can help somebody
that's
deal with whatever they're going through.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R. Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.